Hello, everyone. It's Steve Baker, sometimes known as the Pragmatic Constitutionalist, with another 5 in 10 for you today. Now, before I get started, please don't forget to like this video and follow my Rumble channel or wherever you're listening to this podcast for all the reasons that everyone always mentions on their own podcasts. Those likes, follows, and 5-star ratings, they do really help you guys. You know the drill. All right, here we go. Number one, once again, in my ongoing assertion that the number one domestic threat we now face is the left's assault on free speech, Jonathan Turley filed a report on the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, delivering what he calls a body blow to free speech as well as academic freedom in a ruling against a statistics professor at North Carolina State University, right here in the city where I live. He says, Professor Stephen Porter objected to what he considered the lower standards used by his school to hire minority faculty. The school declared such views as insufficiently collegial and retaliated against him. If this decision stands, uncollegiality, that's a new word, will become the new code for retaliating against dissenters on faculties. In just the last 2 days, I myself have had leftists point out to me that I've not been silenced. Of course, when they say that, it's in some varying manner of scorn. But I've responded by saying that's true, but if you are being honest with me, you and your ilk would silence me if you could. And what do you think their response to that was? Silence. Nothing. Of course, they agree with me. Liberalism doesn't exist any longer, not on the left. The liberals of my youth would declare solidarity with me. They would agree with that old statement, I may not agree with what you have to say, but I'll die for your right to say it. They no longer say that, which is why I no longer call them liberals. They are hard leftists, a mix of neo-communists and fascists, and their primary and first goal is to both control the language and control speech itself. And to Turley's point, there's no better way to execute that process than to chill speech in academics and all educational levels. To frighten professors and teachers away from anything, any speech that challenges any of the preferred and dictated narratives, thereby graduating subsequent generations of brainwashed students into our society. The real horror, though, is that this authoritarian cancer is already so metastasized into the judiciary and the Department of Justice that those who are literally sworn to uphold and defend the First Amendment are now ruling in favor of limiting and punishing certain speech. In rulings like this one, conservative and libertarian professors, which are, of course, already in very short supply, will either be silenced or they'll just leave academics altogether. Number two, Steve Malloy, the founder of JunkScience.com, pointed out that the hottest day idiocy is based on an unusual Antarctic heat wave and is therefore obviously not emissions related. The first permanent Antarctic research station wasn't even established until 1957. So he asks, how can anyone begin to claim to know average daily global temperatures going back to 1850? Well, the obvious response from some will be by checking core samples in tree rings. Yes, but those do not give evidence of record lows or record highs. They just only show us long-term trends in temperatures, like the mini ice age and such, and much longer, warmer trends before the advent of the combustion engine or the Industrial Revolution. Tony Heller of Climate Reality posted a graph on Twitter showing that U.S. forest fire burn acreage through July 7th of this year is at historic lows and less than one-third of the 10-year average. And my favorite contrarian meteorologist, Joe Bastardi of WeatherBell.com, he points out that it's been 38 years since 1986 since the U.S. was hit by a hurricane in June. If there was ever a year to do it, he says that, well, this is it, given the current El Nino and other climactic conditions. He simply and sarcastically says, gotta love climate change, eh? Are parts of the country going through a strong heat wave pattern at present? Yes, but in other areas we have unusually mild summers so far. I've been able to actually work from my front porch every day thus far here in North Carolina without having to retreat to the AC of my office. Fortunately, there are plenty of scientists speaking out to counter this chicken little, sky is falling climate change narrative. We just have to echo their work loud and frequently. Actually, we must do that. Number three, Michael Bailey, professor of psychology at Northwestern University, a professor there for 34 years and a researcher for 40 years, has published well over 100 academic articles on sexual orientation, from genetic influences to childhood precursors of homosexuality to laboratory measured sexual arousal patterns. But his recent research on gender dysphoria was censored. But he says, but I won't be. So he published an article about it. He points out in that article that he says many very controversial things and publishes controversial studies. In fact, he says, and I quote, my research has been denounced by people of all political stripes because I have never prioritized a favored constituency over the truth. Now, that's just my kind of guy, not afraid to speak the truth regardless of the consequences. His recent article entitled Rapid Onset Gender Dysphoria, or ROGD, has been attacked and retracted by a major scientific journal. This study of the social contagion of gender dysphoria examined a rather large cohort of subjects and concludes, and I quote, there is ample evidence that in progressive communities, multiple girls from the same peer group are announcing they are trans almost simultaneously. There has been a sharp increase in this phenomenon across the industrialized West. A recent review from the United Kingdom, which keeps better records than America, showed that a greater than tenfold increase in referrals of adolescent girls happened during just the past decade. And listen to this directly from Bailey's article. Our article was based on parent reports of 1,655 adolescent and young adult children, three-fourths of them female. Emotional problems were common among this group, especially anxiety and depression, which many parents said preceded gender issues by years. Most of these young people had taken steps to socially transition, including changing their pronouns, dress, and identity to the other sex, or in some cases, to neither sex. Parents observed that after their children socially transitioned, their mental health deteriorated. I'm going to link to his article, which concludes with, and I quote again, censors have tried to stop scientific progress before. Now, as then, the pursuit of truth requires scientists and researchers who refuse to cow to Puritans, ideologues, and activists. Number four, today, Senator Chuck Schumer tweeted out the following. He said, the definition of white nationalism is not a matter of opinion. White nationalism, the ideology that white people are inherently superior, that people of color should be segregated, subjected, and relegated to second-class citizenship, is racist down to its rotten core. Well, I couldn't help but respond. My response went thusly. You described leftist and Democrats' core philosophy perfectly. Racism of low expectations manifested by quotas, lowered standards, no voter ID, stopping school choice vouchers, destruction of the black nuclear family structure, and the Democrat-on-Democrat gun violence in your Democrat-controlled inner cities? Yep, second-class citizenry, served up on a racist, white, Democratic, silver-spooned platter by your party, from LBJ to Chucky Schumer to Uncle Joe. It's so transparent, your gaslighting projection is laughable. I have many black friends and associations. They are all high achievers, whether in their careers or in music. They are offended that they and their family members are not expected to show IDs to vote, for example, so forth and so on. White Democrats are the ultimate manifestation of racism in this debate. It is they who say blacks and other minorities cannot succeed in life or escape the poverty of those Democrat-controlled inner cities without our help. Actually, actor Morgan Freeman said it best. He said, the bus leaves from those neighborhoods every day. Leave. Number five, I seem to be becoming the poster boy for asking January 6 related questions that others don't seem to want to touch. Alan Fuhrer of the New York Times just yesterday published a new story about the likelihood of Ray Epps plan to file a defamation lawsuit against Fox News, and that's because of Tucker Carlson's alleged obsession with Epps' actions that day, for which he still has faced no charges. Even though I have personally challenged Allen to ask Epps and to answer for who those eight men were that escorted Epps from the Capitol crowd on January 6th, when Ray Epps himself had testified to the House Select Committee and also told Allen for his first article in the New York Times that he was in D.C. that day only with his son and his son's friend. So who were those other eight men? They don't seem to ever answer that question. Also, Ryan Riley of NBC News has done the most work on the Epps-like provocateur Pink Beret that you heard me talk about and write about. But for some reason, he has failed to report that she has been living in Thailand for quite some time, or to answer the question about why, despite being charged with four crimes for her activities on January 6th, the Department of Justice is not executing an extradition action to bring her home to face those charges. I mean, if those four misdemeanor charges are serious enough to swat other January 6 offenders, why aren't they bringing her home to face the music here in America? And why, despite being the most recorded event in the history of the world, is there no video of Officer Harry Dunn's claim and testimony that 20, 40, as many as 50 people were chanting boo, N-word, Biden voter at him? This is despite the fact that it seemed like one out of every three or four people in the Capitol that day were holding up their cell phones and taking videos of their time in the Capitol. There are even more serious questions I've been working on lately related to January 6th, as most of you know, including during my recent time in front of that 41,000 hours of January 6th video at the Capitol's O'Neill building. Well, stay tuned for those. I promise they're coming soon. All right, that's it for today. Please consider joining my Locals community where I share content I do not put out anywhere else. It is free to subscribe, and please do that. Come on over, try it out at least, test drive, kick the tires. But if you can, for as little as $5 per month, you can help me in these ongoing investigations into government weaponization and the things that I have been working on related to January 6th. Simply go to tpc4usa.com. TPC, the number 4USA.com, or from your app store, download the Locals app and then search for @TPC4USA. You can also find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Truth Social with the exact same handle, @TPC4USA. Thanks a bunch, guys, and I will see you again tomorrow with another 5 and 10.